What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode number 125 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, aka All Day Ray, aka Thunder Cleese. And I'm joined here by my exuberant co-host, former market maker of 20 years and current day retail trader and educator, the man who's been dropping knowledge that goes over your head like a bulimic on a seesaw, the House Street heartthrob, JJ. How's it going?
Good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing really good, and I am excited for our guest today, who has been trading for 20 years and is featured often in major fintech outlets and aligned with many trading platforms: Bazinga Pro, Investor's Business, Daily, MetaStock, MotiveWade, Trend Spider, Rocket Scooter, Place Your Trades, Top Step Trader, TraderRaid. Jeez. The president and CEO of thetradingbook.com and the author of The Trading Book, A Complete Solution to Mastering Technical Systems and Trading Psychology. Of course, I am talking about Anne-Marie Ban. Anne-Marie, how's it going?
That's great. I love hearing all that stuff about myself. That and $5 will buy me a cup of coffee at Starbucks. So always keeping that.
Absolutely. We really appreciate you coming on. Interesting thing I read about you, Anne-Marie, and I hope it's true. I mean, it's at least according to your Wikipedia page. You were born in Trinidad and Tobago?
That's right.
That's interesting. Were you just born there, or did you live there for some time?
My family are Portuguese immigrants.
Okay.
And so they moved in to the islands, and I actually have a Chinese grandmother who passed away, but everybody else is Portuguese. And we moved to the States when I was 13.
Oh, wow.
In May of 1979.
Wow, so interesting.
A long time ago. Yeah. So,
interesting background there. What was it like, I guess, you know, growing up there the first 13 years of your life? Just a little bit about the culture and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's a laid back culture. It's an island culture.
Mm-hmm.
My folks moved to the States because they wanted better opportunities for us as individuals that could just make things happen. You know, being an immigrant family, it's different. It's different. We come to the States realizing that you can do anything you want, really.
Mm-hmm.
If you just meet the right people and put your nose to the grindstone most of the time, right? I mean, we're not going to end up running countries or the States, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's really a lot of ways for an upward path. And so my folks said, hey, let's sell everything we've got and let's give it a go. And literally, when my parents moved here to the States, they got a job. They both got jobs in a furniture factory, making $1.25 an hour.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And so to say, hey, listen, you can really just bootstrap it, work hard, and find something that you're good at and get after it. I mean, I'm a picture of the American dream, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm super proud of that. And we got a lot of problems here in the States, but as somebody who literally has lived all over the world, I can tell you it's still the best place to be.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love to hear that. That's a great, just like classic American story. That's
It's fantastic.
Definitely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Anne-Marie, so I'm definitely interested in talking to you a little bit about what you did previously prior to trading. You were a neuroscience researcher, and you have a background as a mathematical statistician.
Statistician, yeah.
Which is strikes me as probably obviously being very relevant to trading. Maybe
yes,
not.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So yeah, I'm just curious to hear about your background in those.
So I wanted to be a doctor when I first went to college, and I had a wonderful senior advisor who I really did not like at the time. He was a master's student going through all the pre-med stuff. And he said, "You have the personality to be a doctor. You'd be a better scientist." Because I didn't, and I still don't. I don't, hanging around with people doesn't energize me. It exhausts me. I want to go to bed. I want to hide. Right. I'm just not, I'm not a people person. And so he could see that. And he said, "All right, you're going to be a scientist." And I said, "Okay." And then I said, "All right, well, I'll be a scientist." And I took organic chemistry. And then I absolutely hated it. And I
Me
said, "All
too.
right, well, I'm not going to be that kind of scientist." And so I went to mathematics, and it was my love. And but I always loved biology. And so when I took the role of statistician, that was the space where I said, "Oh, I could use the biology and work in biostatistics and learn about the things that we can measure from that perspective." And so when I did that, I found a space that I loved. I loved looking at how people reacted. I loved looking at those things that say, the mob rules. It's much easier to predict what a group of people are going to do than an individual. And so all of that behavioral stuff really started to cement in my mind. I absolutely loved it. And so when I graduated, I went to a neuroscience clinic and I said, "I want to know if you have any statisticians that can do data for you." And I had already talked to the school, so they had said, "Hey, yeah, come over." And I got a job as a neuroscience researcher. And what we were doing, and they still have studies on this because it's something that they're trying to focus on to make better, but it's very elusive. It's how the vagal nerve, which is this nerve that runs all the way up the back of your neck and sort of hooks in the back of your brain like this. And if you have a certain kind of epilepsy that can't be cured with medication, sometimes the vagal nerve gives you a little forewarning. And that forewarning we could measure with a vagal nerve stimulator. And so that was my science event. That's what I worked at. But literally, I got paid pennies. I mean, and what happened every Friday morning at 7 a.m. is you sit around with all the brain surgeons and they look through all the folks that are doing X, Y, or Z. And, they're not going to listen. They're brain surgeons and they already have a God complex. They're not going to listen to some schmuck tell them that, well, statistically speaking, that's really not something that you want to do. So it was infuriating and it was not, I love the science, but did not love the environment of the work. And so I became a recruiter for scientists because I could talk the talk. And I did that for 14 years before I found the markets.
Okay, interesting.
Wow.
Because I'm thinking, okay, background, statistician, neuroscience, perhaps having maybe a more insight than the average person on how the brain works that would help lead or, maybe give you a stronger acclimation to trading, but perhaps not, because you're kind of like, oh no, not really.
Yeah, not at all. So here's why. As a mathematician and a statistician, your brain tends towards logic. The market is not logical at all. It's very emotional and very behavioral. And so you then listen. When I first started trading, I was the worst trader you could possibly imagine. Everything I thought was upside down because I thought, okay, if it does this, then it's going to do this. And it just did that. So this time it's going to do this. And true enough, sometimes it happens. But if you aren't managing risk, and if you aren't looking at the market as playground of buyers and sellers trying to get rid of inventory, you're totally going to be out in La La Land thinking that, your technical indicators are going to give you clues. And so I was literally a bumbling idiot for about 3, 4 years easily. I started with a ton of money and lost millions of dollars.
Wow.
And so I really was in a space where, my husband, God love him, he just looked at me one day and went, "I don't think you know what you're doing. And if you don't stop, everything's going to be gone." And I think he was the only person on earth that could have said that to me. And so, and I kept the losses from him. So
Wow.
when, yeah, oh yeah, it was bad. Almost destroyed my marriage, truly. So note to others, if you're hiding, it means something's wrong. You better come clean, or there's going to be a dumpster fire on the back end. And so, he just said, "Stop and figure it out. I know you're going to figure it out, but you've got to pump the brakes and figure out what in the world you're doing, because you do not know what you're doing." And the thing about trading is, you can have an idea about what might happen, but if you don't know how to manage risk,
Sure.
it's coffee talk. It
Exactly.
doesn't matter at all. It's coffee talk. And so that it, my education did one thing for me. It allowed me to understand what a dedication to process is going to be all about. Because I was never the smartest girl in the class. And there always a lot of men, it was very male dominated, and it's still very largely male dominated, but I really had to study. I really had to just bear down to get through my classes. And that prepared me well. That prepared me
That was
for
what prepared.
working in the markets. You gotta look at your mistakes and go, okay, how much of this was risk? How much of this was epsilon, that error where you go, holy cow, and how much of this was a lack of preparation? Right? So today, for instance, had a small one lot in the NQs, totally forgot that there was an 830 number coming out.
Oh, geez.
I had my stop set, but there's that thing called slippage.
Definitely. Yeah,
Oh my
just
God.
because you have a stop doesn't mean your order's actually going to get
Exactly.
filled. Most people don't know
500
that.
bucks of slippage off of one lot.
No, wow.
Yep. Yeah, that's you
Pure
know, that's
suckage.
yeah, that's sorry to interrupt, but it's
Oh no,
something that
absolutely.
you know, people, retail traders don't understand. If there's nothing in the book, you're not going to get filled.
Exactly.
Right. And it's just when the thing, too, is in these new markets, the order books are so thin. And in the old days, we used to call and have to order, put in the orders. Traders would manually. So there was a time slippage. Now, because the algos are so quick, they can trade around us so many times before we even blink. The order book
Absolutely.
thins out, orders hit the market. And everyone just gets, I mean, I've seen it where it doesn't even, it'll gap where it doesn't even trade when news
Yeah.
comes out. Sorry. Sorry.
Yeah.
But
Oh
yeah.
no, please don't apologize. That commentary there is really something that tells you, listen, be aware. And I know I need to be aware, and I'm still schlepping around going, yeah, I'm going to leave that on for a minute. Just knucklehead, knucklehead
It
man.
happens to all.
It's like the, you know, we're human, I guess, right? It's
Yeah.
we're gonna do these
Yeah.
things. Yeah.
And the market's going to exploit that humanity any way that it can.
I like the way you put that, exploit that humanity for sure. Anne Marie, that's incredible. Just to like, you know, to circle back to your early struggles, I believe I heard you correctly, lost millions, you said. Because you know, I know people look up to you. You're highly respected, and so I think it's you know, important for people to hear that, you know, like that even someone like yourself went through like massive struggles, even, you know, it, you said almost wrecked your marriage. How are you feeling? I mean, I think it's a testament to your resiliency, obviously, because I think a lot of people, I couldn't imagine what all that's feeling like. And then personal turmoil. Do you mind just speaking on that a little bit and like how you made it through that?
You know, that's a really good question. There was a lot of, one, I was keeping a secret, and you guys probably know this because I'm pretty vocal about it. I am a Jesus freak. And so the Book of Solomon says, be sure your sin will find you out. And so I was living with this burden of, holy cow, I'm not telling my husband that he's... things are getting worse, and it's just creating all this tremendous anxiety, which is absolutely sending cortisol to the brain. It short circuits the prefrontal cortex, and so complex decisions become even harder. So I was in this downward spiral, and I kept saying to myself, listen, you don't fail at anything, so you're not going to fail at this. But how long is this going to take? So I would be encouraging myself and encouraging myself. And then finally, you know, my husband went in and he looked at the accounts and he went, okay, we're pumping the brakes today. Today we pump the brakes. And immediately I felt the release of all the secrets gone. Like, whew, okay. Yeah. Right. It's like the criminal that goes in because he's been arrested. And then he goes, all right, I did it.
Yeah.
I did it. I'm so glad. That's exactly what happened.
Wow.
Right. You just want to get it off your chest. Yeah. And so that was it. And then the trauma of, I had Thinkorswim as my platform. And you know, the sound that Thinkorswim makes when it has a trade.
Yep.
It goes bleep. Right.
Yep.
I'd get sick to my stomach hearing it.
Yeah.
Because I knew something bad was going to happen. Even today, I have all the sounds off
Good.
Of my trading
Good.
Platforms.
Good.
Because wow. That was so Pavlovian for me. I was like, yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't take it. So yeah. I just started paper trading. And little by little, I said, all right, you've got to sort of break everything that's been a bad habit. And let me tell you, habits are hard to break when your brain keeps thinking, no, remember that one time? Mm-hmm. And there's a fantastic book a lot of people recommended, but it's really, really good. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow. It's by Daniel Kahneman.
Yeah.
And what he says is, there's something called a heuristic. It's the thing that we grab onto almost immediately. And it's usually there to reinforce our prior beliefs. And so if you're somebody that just loves shorting a top, or this has got to be the top, or this has got to be the bottom, you're going to lever in and lever in and lever in. And every once in a while, when you've got a ton of money, like I started with, you could lever in and lever in and lever in. And then...
Dangerous.
A little big pop and you're good until you get drawn down so much that, you know, somebody's going to be giving you a margin call going, I'm sorry, you can't do that. And so it was very dangerous. And that's the little ones kept me doing it. The little wins,
sure.
Until the big ones just started really washing me out. And so you have to sort of go, one, here's the big thing for traders. When we go through massive losses like that, we start self-recrimination. I suck. I'm a bad person. I don't know what I'm doing. Da, 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 da. Listen, I can look at someone and go, hey, I don't think you know what you're doing. But that is not an indictment of you, the person.
Mm-hmm.
What it is an indictment of is the process. And what we have a tendency to do is internalize that. I'm bad, I'm whatever. And really, because my anchor is in the Lord, I knew that language was just something I had to break. And so I would hear something go, "You suck." And then I'd go, "No, no, that execution was not ideal. Some mistakes were made. Let's go after it." And you separate the emotion of me as a trader separate from, wait, what am I doing? This is the reason that so many people get caught up in these terrible emotional cyclones that bring them to the floor, and then they just simply cannot get out of it. They understand up here, hey, this is the business of transacting, holding inventory and releasing inventory. This is what this business is. That's all it is. But we can't operate like that, because everything we do, because we're sentient, because we think, and therefore we exist, we know who we are, all of that involves a frame of reference. My frame of reference is totally different to JJ's, totally different to yours, right? And so that's going to make us think something different in all kinds of spaces. Let's imagine all three of us are at the park. And this is a true story. When I was in college, I was walking. I cannot believe I'm going to tell this story. I'm walking back from, literally, I'm so embarrassed. Okay, I'm walking class. I'm like, you know what? It's Friday. I deserve an ice cream. I'm walking back. I stop, little ice cream thing. I get cookies and cream. It's 97 degrees. I'm at NC State and it's still September. It's just hot as could be. And I'm licking this ice cream, looking around campus, whatever. And I go, oh my gosh, I dropped it all over myself. And I lick it. And it was bird dropping. Because listen. So immediately as it hit my tongue, I was like,
oh my God.
Spitting all over the place. Now, this is us in the future. We're all sitting at a park together. And Ray goes, oh my gosh, ice cream. The only flavor they have is cookies and cream. Let's go. Who's not buying a cookies and cream ice cream? It's me. And it's because of that. I will not eat cookies and cream today because of that. And that happened 50 years ago, almost 45 years ago. It was absolutely debilitating. I hate thinking about it. I cannot believe I actually told that story here. So this frame of reference really makes us dig into all the psychological anchors that we have. And when you've been making mistakes for a long time, you have to really take baby steps. And when you're making those baby steps, you have to go in there and really nurse yourself and say, listen, it's okay. The past is the past. You're here today. JJ says, listen, you manage your risk. You watch. Here's what's going to happen. We could have a look below and fail. We could have a look above and fail. Let's just watch how these guys are going to clear their inventory. And once we know, we can set the risk and move into the trade. And that's all you focus on. You get laser focused on process. It's like the kid who's learning to ride a bike. He's going to be scared until mom or dad goes, no, no, feel it, hold it. Don't be afraid. Watch your wheel. Mm-hmm. Look up, look ahead. And you eventually get it. And the only thing that brings confidence is repetition. And the only thing that separates the amateur from the professional is consistent repetition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's as simple as that. And you
definitely,
it's hard to walk through it without being kind to yourself. And sometimes we grow up thinking, hey, if I'm kind to myself, then, you know, I'm letting myself off the hook. Well, you're not letting yourself off the hook. You're setting to process. What you're doing is not deriding yourself, not looking in the mirror and going, you know, I'm a loser. Well, the whole world is going to beat you up. Why do you have to do it too? You don't have to do it.
For sure. That was awesome. That was everything you said. That was really amazing. And I think having that, like, that spiritual grounding is a great, I don't
It's
want to
my
say like for
anchor.
confidence, but it
Oh,
keeps you
it is for
going,
confidence. It
right?
is.
Yeah. I love that confidence and just to push through, like to persevere, faith that it's all going to work out, you know.
Yep.
And I
Yep.
that's
And
the
even
that
if it doesn't, then you're okay with that because somebody big is taking care of me. And no matter what happens, I'm going to make it through. No matter how dark, no matter, like right now, my mother is in hospice and I have a brother-in-law in hospice. Both of them at the end of their lives, so much stuff going on. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if I start thinking about it, I'll get very emotional, but I know no matter what, it's going to be okay. No matter how hard it is, how easy it is, I'm going to be able to put one foot in front of the other and pull through. So it is really a confidence that the way forward is going to be okay, no matter what.
Yeah, I love that. Beautiful, beautiful. I'm just going
Right.
to take a quick time out to announce that our own Micro E Futures Trading Room is now offering a 7-day free trial with no obligations, offering not only ES where JJ teaches and trade, but other future instruments, stocks, crypto, and even for my real degenerates, we got DFS and sports betting, which I am highly active in. Again, that's a 7-day free trial with no obligations or commitments. Come join us at microefutures.com. And Marie, so to the point where, trading, started to turn around for you, what do you think you could point to? Was it maybe more of, was it, I know you mentioned risk a few times. I'm sure maybe that was probably an issue. Was it more technical side? Like what do you think like turned it around for you?
Managing risk. Managing risk. That really, so let's say that I only have a 30% win rate, right? If I manage my risk appropriately, I can still make a good living, right? If I let
Absolutely.
my winners run, right? And I'm managing my risk. So risk is the number one thing that traders do not embrace because a lot of times people come into trading, it's like a slot machine. They're like, oh, I'm going to throw these 10 trades on and let's see if I come up with some cherries on the top, you know, whatever.
It almost even seems encouraged, like, well, not encouraged, but kind of,
Yes,
right? Yeah.
it is. It is. And so realizing that that's not true. And you have to look at it in a space of, all right, if I take this trade and it goes badly, can I get up and trade again? And how many times can I do that in a row before I run out of money? And so after every single execution, the trader has to step back. Remember, it's process and then process consistently. That yields a professional outcome. And so every trade, you have to sit back and go, okay, did I execute that well? Did I manage my risk well? And what could I have done better? Every single time. Now, some people might go, oh, that seems so. Listen, you want to see a guy up on a mound, you know, it's baseball season. I love baseball, right? You think that pitcher is just willy-nilly about whatever, he's not, right? And that's why he's making the big bucks. Or if he tries to do it and he just bombs, well, back to AAA, buddy. You know, it's not, there's a consistent measurement, and people forget all the work that's required to be a professional anything.
Exactly.
They're like, yeah, what? See how it goes, you know, and because we're doing it with the click of a mouse, it's not real money. I mean, go to a
Exactly.
bank, grab us, get $500 out of the bank in $20 bills and stack it in front of your machine and look at it while you're trading. That is going to make a difference. because we do not anchor ourselves in the fact that this is real money and it could move in a way that's really detrimental. And so that event is supremely important above all things, just the management of that risk. And then after you've done 3, 4, 5 trades, if they all go bad, go, is something wrong with my process? If I'm executing my process and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, it should work. If I do it 10 times, I should have something that tells me, okay, it should at least work a few times. If it doesn't, something's wrong with the process. You're not seeing something. It's the wrong market environment, because market environments change. And so you have to step back and go, let's reassess. And it doesn't mean strategy hop. Well, I move over here. Oh, I move over. You know, people think, oh, I'm going to try this for a month. If it doesn't work, I'm going to go over here. When those of us have been working with the same strategies for 15, 20 years, and we're like, no, you don't want to do that. You can tweak and see what's happening. But this strategy hopping is just a death knell for so many folks. And you can't tell them because they're looking for the Holy Grail.
Right.
Exactly.
Great points all around. Have you, Anne-Marie, you know, speaking of market shifts, strategy shifts, have you more or less stayed like strategically wise, strategy wise, similar, or have you? The whole time.
Yeah. So what happened in the very beginning when I was crowned Mrs. Horrible at trading, and I said, "All right, I'm gonna get myself a new moniker, and I'm gonna lay that down and work." I realized I had too many indicators on. Because I was thinking more is better, but see, less is better. Less is better. You look at price, you look at, you know, your VWAP, and that's basically it. I have a momentum indicator I look at once in a while, but here's my recommendation to everybody. If you have just put on a trade, think about the indicators that made you go ding. And if you're not looking at the others, you're either not following your process or you've got ancillary things that need to be gone from your screen. You must use everything on your screen to make every decision that you make. And see, for me, because I am on the autism spectrum, I have to really pull back and only look at a few things at a time, because I literally have the attention span of a cocker spaniel. And so as I'm staring it down, I have to go, okay, 1, 2, 3. All right, those are all setting up. There it is. There's my risk. There I go. And so because I've done the same thing over and over again, I can do it very quickly. But so many of us have this and then this and then this and then this. And the more indicators you have, the more likely it is that they will contradict each other. Mm-hmm. And when they contradict each other, then our brain goes into, oh, what a coulda, shoulda, maybe. And then we end up entering either too late or we try to jump the gun. And all of that destroys nice, clean process, right? Mm-hmm. And clean process is what it's all about. So yeah, you know, if I have to say every year I continue, I try to do less and less with my indicators. And so literally I have two maybe on my screen, and really they're price and trend related.
That's awesome. It's such a consistent thing said by everyone we talk to. You even mentioned Daniel Kahneman and his book Thinking Fast and Slow. He wrote a book maybe a couple of years ago. I have it. Really good.
New one.
Noise. Yeah. And it kind of makes me think of that, right? Like, you know, too much, definitely not always better. And a lot of times it's detrimental. And it always makes me think of, and I've come to appreciate this meme more over time, you know, like that bell curve meme. And it's like the really like the dumb person who's just like says a simple phrase. And then it's like the genius on the other side who says the same simple phrase. And it's the person in the middle that has the long explanation that is on the wrong side of things.
Exactly.
It's like you'd rather be dumb or like really smart, but they come to the same conclusions.
Exactly. And you know, that's the thing. I had so much education and everything. I just cluttered my mind up.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
That's really what sent me down into a rabbit hole of dismal performance. It's just, you just have to declutter your mind.
Yeah.
Declutter it.
Yeah, it's almost like, I know, at least for myself, it's just hard to believe sometimes, right? It's like, oh no, it can be simple. Like what?
It can be,
Coming
from the guy who had to, using paper tickets, it's simple, right? It's not easy, but it's simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. It's not rocket science, but it does require attention to process. And that
Definitely.
is the big thing.
Yep. For sure. So you've touched on, well, you said, I know you've said supply demand, support resistance. These are the primary things you're looking at before you're executing a trade.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. And has it always more or less been that way for you? I know you said you had to declutter a little bit, but since you got successful.
Well, you know what? In the very beginning, I started with momentum indicators. And so here's the thing about a momentum indicator. If you use it as a primary trigger event, they're lagging indicators, and momentum can lie to you. Price, not so much. Price comes in to where it sits, and you can immediately tell if people are interested in a product at that particular price. It leaves the shelves immediately, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of, I had to figure out, listen, Annie, which is what folks call me at home. My mother, she'll call me Annie. I'll say, listen, Annie, how about making it simple? How about looking to see where everybody's buying and throw out that momentum indicator? Let price tell you, here's what's happening. And then if you want to look at the momentum indicator to confirm what you think price is doing, then that's perfectly fine. So I had to sort of reorder, right? I did not give price the preeminence that it deserves. And so I gave price the preeminence, and then everything else is sort of like, I don't know, bumper rails on, the bowling alley, as it were, right? As you're coming in for that stuff. So that's really how I use it. Super, super simple. I look at the great big levels, weekly high, low, open, close, monthly high, low, open, close. And then I'll come into the daily and I'll say, okay, are we above the close of the prior day? And are we above the high of the prior day? Well, if that's the case, everybody's telling me, hey. And so as long as it doesn't lose those levels, I'm going to tag along. I'm going to look at my 5-minute, wait for a little pullback, comes into a wick or a congestion, and then I'm off to the races. The moment it starts coming back into that area, I go, all right, something's changed. Let's sit down and see where it might go to. Where's the VWAP? What slope is the VWAP? What kind of volume am I looking at? Those sorts of things. What I do with candlesticks is just tell a story. I make it very, and I tell myself this because truthfully, inside, I still think I'm about 8 years old. So I like watching cartoons. I make jokes to make myself laugh. You're a typical 8-year-old. And so when I talk about the markets, I look at them and I go, okay, well, these guys, they don't want to get caught holding the bag here. And so if I see that line break and I'm thinking about being long, it's good night, Irene. I'm out of there. And so I'm just thinking about, old ladies rushing to the, the Nordstrom rack of 60% off or whatever, going, right? Grabbing whatever and going, all right, well, there's none of those left. And so that's literally how I tell myself these stories as I'm looking through it. And it makes sense to me because I tap into the emotional story being told by the candlestick. The emotional story being told by the candlestick is, hey, buddy, good luck buying it down there because it ain't coming back for you. And so on and so forth, right?
Nice.
And so if, as long as I can keep that narrative going through the day, I know that I'm on the right track. But if I look at the chart and I go, wait, what just happened right there? Then I go, wait a second, you might need to reassess that narrative. Step back, take your hand off the mouse, push back from the desk and go, is the same thing that was happening an hour ago happening right now? And I'm always telling that story, so it gives me sort of the emotional temperament
of
what's going on with the traders. And that's, I mean, that's really my thing. And it's a little bit weird, I realize.
No, that's good. That's good. Oh, and by the way, nothing on the little old ladies, but you ever see Ray when Versace goes on sale?
Oh,
don't get in his way.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. Thank you. She doesn't blame me. That was so eccentric.
That's where my watches are Versace.
Excellent. I got one too. Of course I do, but that was so eccentric. It's getting in touch with like almost like that intuition or like that feel, like to gauge your feelings. And it's probably different for all of us, but I relate to that feeling exactly what you're saying, even though I'm not picturing the ladies at Macy's or Nordstrom's, but that's so funny. That's awesome. What markets do you trade, Amory?
I love the futures. I'm in love with the futures. I started with options. I still trade quite a bit of options. But I started with options because of the leverage. And I really trade options like a caveman, really price related. I trade the same levels as I would look at the futures market. But futures, you know, they're my swan song, sweet song kind of thing. I just absolutely love them. I love the NQ because it's manic. And it moves very quickly, and I can be in and out. So that helps me with my Cocker Spaniel personality. And then on the days that I'm not really feeling 100%, you know, you get up some days and you're like, why is my head in a fog? Right? You just either didn't sleep well or dreamed you're running all night or whatever it is. Then I will go to a slower market. I always sit down and go, well, how sharp do you feel today?
Smart.
Yeah, how sharp do you feel? You feel a little slower? Let's go to the YM. You feel like you can do some stuff, but you still want to be a little careful. How about you go to the ES, right? And so, but I trade the ES, the NQ. I trade oil. I'll trade gold once in a while, and then I'll trade the YM. But they're my favorites. I love not having to go study about who reported what. And that part of the earnings event is, you know, that's I love it. I mean, I love it. I hope I can trade when I'm 100 years old, if I make it to 100. Literally, my husband is just talking about, so when are you going to stop? I'm like, never.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, I want to travel. And I'm like, we could travel. I'm just going to be trading.
Yeah.
So, I love the market so much. And I think it's probably because I have the kind of personality that loves to problem. Because if there's a problem around, I'm like, ooh, let's see what we can do to figure that out. Right. And so I am completely energized by the magic of all the things that move around in the market. I love it. I hope I never stop trading. I trade when everybody goes, gosh, you know, how come Charlie Munger was 87 years old and in the office. I'm like, yeah, that's me. Right. I mean, hobbling in
That's
there with
awesome.
my little walker.
That's awesome. I totally 100% believe that it's like, you know, everyone kind of has that type of, there's something that energizes people in that same manner, whether, no matter the topic. And like, that's what we have to pursue in life.
Yeah, for sure.
It'll keep you going through the hard times when you've lost millions of dollars,
absolutely.
You know, like,
absolutely,
because you can't deny that feeling you have for it. It's incredible. That's awesome to hear. So it sounds like you're a smaller time frame trader, I want to say.
Yes, in terms of hold.
Yes, in terms of hold time. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, in terms of the time that I hold it, I am flat every night. I want to sleep. I've got option positions on that run through, on small swing formations, and so I've been caught limit up a couple of times. And so, you know, I mean, it was okay, but I just didn't, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to sleep, because sleep really is, it's the elixir, right? It is so rejuvenating to have good sleep and good exercise. And those two things are really the only things that ultimately matter in terms of keeping yourself healthy. So yeah, I definitely need sleep. I can't. Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. I know, like, it's got me to a point where, well, the working out, like, if I'm in a bad mood, I just like go force myself to either go lift some weights, go for a run, like, even though I don't want
the
to,
same.
But it's like, it'll snap you out of the mood immediately, or like, or afterwards, it'll snap you out. And I'm like, wow, I just a completely different person now.
Yeah. There's the biology of the endorphins. It's beyond incredible what the body can do to help itself out of a slump if you just give it what it needs.
Yeah. That's great. That's incredible. Let's see here. So tell us a little bit about the book that you wrote. What led you to writing a book?
So here's the thing, that every time I tell this story, people who've been trying to write books and getting them published always roll their eyes. But honest to goodness, this is exactly how it happened. I'm on Twitter one day. I'm about maybe 6 years in or so, and getting my stride. Got, you know, a fair bit of followers, and out of the blue, this woman named Stephanie, I don't know if Stephanie wants me to tell her last name, I think you can go find her. She's no longer at McGraw-Hill, but she is a very accomplished editor. Out of the blue, she sends me a DM and she goes, I was thinking that you should write a book. And I said, what's that going to entail? And she said, let's get on the phone. And so I had gone through the stage of my husband going, holy cow, what are you doing? It's time to square away. So my brain was really in a good spot. And she said, why don't you write a book that tells your journey and to focus on the things that you focus on? And at the time, I really had loved Fibonacci retracements. And I still do them once in a while. And so I said, okay. And she said, all right, have at it. And we'd like for you to do it in 4 months. And so I was trading full time and I had a room and it was very busy. And for 4 months, I slept about 3 hours a night because I would write at the end of the day. And listen, I opened up some of my trading journals and I let it all out. I just put it all out on the page. I mean, there were days that I chewed all my fingernails off and left them in a pile. I don't have any idea why I looked at them. I chewed them off and I put them in a big pile. I looked at them, but I would get so anxious and unable to manage my emotions And I just talked about the journey through that. And at the end of 4 months, I turned it over to a magnificent editor. And she said, all right, I need for you to reframe this. I need to you do that. And then, you know, I got to be in the Wall Street Journal. I got to be at just 5 or 6 major outlets that they just promoted the book. It was in every Barnes and Noble. Amazing. It was just, it was surreal. It was absolutely surreal. And it was fantastic. I liked doing it, but I did a workbook to accompany it. So I actually wrote 2 of them. I wrote a companion workbook that walked through actual trades that I took, where they went bad, where they went good, what could I have done better, and so on and so forth. And I get asked to write another book again, but honestly, I feel like I was a one-hit wonder there, in terms of, it's so hard to write if you're just not in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta tell you, I've tried so hard to get back into, because people want me to. I mean, the book still sells, still buy it on Amazon, it's still in print, and so, you know, it, I just don't know if I got it to do it again. I might have to do, maybe I'll do a byline for somebody. I'm huge actors.
Well, if it's meant to be, it'll come back to you. So you wrote it.
Exactly.
That's at least that's the way I look at it, right? Like it's back to that feeling. You got to have that, like,
yeah, exactly.
That oomph to do it. So you wrote it in 4 months.
Wow.
That's pretty fast. That's from at least that's from amazing. Some other authors we've talked to. That's like really fast.
Exactly.
I was literally, I stopped. My kids never even saw me, right? They, which is really terrible, because I had teenagers at the time, and they were young teenagers too. And so they come into the office and just start talking randomly about things. And I would go, it's time for me to go. And so I think they missed me a fair bit. But it was literally, I started working at 6 o'clock and stopped at maybe 1:30 or 2 a.m. I'd sleep until 6 and start it all over again. And I just literally wrote 7 hours at a time. It was just falling out of my head. Literally falling out of my head. And so I That's just great. Pushed and pushed and pushed until it was done. And then, you know, it was like, you know, I see some authors, like, you know, some authors are just so prolific. They'll write 10, 12 books. I'm like, how does a person do that? Because I'll go, wait, I said that already. You know what I'm saying? Maybe some people are afraid to repeat themselves, but I'm terrified of it, frankly. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, some people are just authors, right? That's
yeah,
their.
That's exactly right. They have
that's,
it.
That's
they have
their
that
thing.
Juice.
Yes.
Yeah.
They have
yeah,
that juice.
Just like I love to go to the markets, they love to put, you know, they love to put their fingers to the keyboard.
For sure. For sure. That's awesome. That's definitely, that's an impressive feat. 4 months. That's amazing.
Definitely.
And Marie, do you ever feel burnt out from trading?
Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you give it so much, but listen, we know sometimes it's a grind.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like I see, again, love baseball, but I'm always watching the guys, their body language, how they're walking onto the field. And when they've had like a 9-day or a 15-day run of games, I can see them and they're like, man, I need a nap. Right? So trading is like that. And you just have to really, you do yourself so much harm when you don't back away. And it happens a lot when you're failing and you go,
sure.
If I just bear down harder. And here's the magnificent thing about the mind. If you can just give it room to refresh,
yeah,
it'll come back better for you.
Right.
You just have to give it room. Let go so that what you want comes back to you. And so that's the, you know, I always have this open-handed approach, right? A closed fist can't collect anything, right? So stop hanging on to whatever it is you think you're hanging on. Let go and just relax your mind, step away from the desk, give yourself some time off, and all the things that you're looking for will come out of the gap and start flooding into the real places that it belongs. It's just, but it's so hard to do. It's easy to say, but hard to do, especially if you're struggling and you want to get it.
Yeah, that's something it took me, or I'm still even prone, I think, to slipping into. And I always love the sports analogies to trading, because I think it's 100% applicable. And, you know, I grew up playing sports, Emery, and it's always that, like, I know we're going to push through, just kind of like that warrior attitude. And like you said, it's more stepping. You can just double down on the problem. You can make it worse. Your brain, like you said, if you can't think on complex problems, you need to step back. And that's something I got like constantly remind myself, because I'll just like grind.
Yes.
And
absolutely. Pressure is good, but not too much of it. And everybody has a different level of pressure that they can hang on to, right? The level of pressure, like him or not, Tom Brady could handle a tremendous amount of pressure. Mahomes, holy cow, that guy's superhuman with the pressure that he can manage. But each of us has that breaking point, whatever it is, when literally nothing fires correctly here. Mm-hmm. And what we begin to tell ourselves are fallacies all the way around, mm-hmm. because we're simply trying to cope. And so backing away is the most important thing that you can do for yourself, because stress makes you make bad decisions.
100%. Definitely.
100%.
Yep. What do you think are some habits of highly effective traders?
Effective traders?
Yeah.
Commitment to process. A desire to keep at it. You know, your love for the game will keep you in the game through the grind, right? Everybody needs a break, but you gotta love the game. If you don't love the game and you're just here to get in, take what you need and get out, that's okay too, but you're gonna have to give yourself some extra room when stressors come, because your love of the game will not hold you through, because you don't really love the game, right? And those are the only two things. Everything else is completely different. Mm-hmm. Some people have a level of intuition that is otherworldly. Like, what? And some people are very good at certain things, and they are, you know, they're an artist or some sort of, you know, a tattoo artist, and they're absolutely incredible at managing that. So they come from everywhere. The one thing is that commitment to process and understanding how to build relief time in the grind, right? So right now it's the All-Star break. Everybody who's not on the All-Star team, they got 4 days where they're like, oh God, right there, and they're getting ready for the next leg. And so, you know, you just, I think that's the common thing. Mm-hmm. You've got to learn to play hard and give yourself some time to refresh, even if you're doing badly, because doing badly, you know, you're only going to end up doing more badly, because the stress is not going to help you be better.
For sure. All right, I got a couple of miscellaneous questions. I forgot to ask you this in the beginning when we were talking about you growing up in Trinidad Tobago. How was your acclimation to the United States when you first got here?
Dude, it was so bad, because we went to I went to a convent when I was in school, right? The uniforms and the hair tied back in the, and we were in a British school system, so I came over with a bit of a British accent, and I moved to the mountains of North Carolina. And so,
Wow.
suffice to say, oh yeah, it was so hard. And I think that's why my siblings and I are still very close to this day, because we were fish out of water. I mean, and when you're little, even if you're a teen, I was the eldest of my siblings. You know, everybody wants to get along. Nobody wants to be different when you're that age. Everybody wants to be the same, inclusive. And that sort of anchored my belief in, listen, I'm going to be an outsider no matter where I am. And I'm okay with that. I am. I'm okay with not being part of that club of whatever, because my entire formative teenage years, I was always on the fringe of, you know, I was a little bit of a klutz. I didn't know how to play any sports, and I didn't even know how to do small talk because I was an autist, or I am an autist, and I didn't realize that I was on the spectrum, and I didn't get diagnosed until I was 35. And
Oh, wow.
That all of that, it was really hard. But my dad, who is no longer here, he would always say, chin up, tomorrow's going to be better. He was the eternal optimist. I would get so mad at him, things burning down all around him. He'd go, don't worry, it'll be all right. Tomorrow's another day. But I clung to it, and you know, now I'm okay being a little bit weird. I still laugh at myself, and I enjoy that. I enjoy my quirkiness, and it's okay. I'm in a space of that grew out of that. Hey, you're in a place where people don't even think you belong. You know, what are you doing in our little town? You know. And so I think it served me well for the market. I do. I think it served me
That's
well.
Great.
That's awesome. I think, I don't know. It's like, I almost like come to believe, like, you probably don't want to fit in. I feel like.
I don't.
Right? Like, I'm just saying, it's like a human, like, probably fitting
I
into
know.
The group, you're probably, I don't know, you're probably wrong, or you're not,
I'm
like.
Happy on the fringe.
Yeah.
Happy on the fringe. Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right
it's
being
true.
On the.
Yeah. You're right.
I think
but
so.
Nobody wants to feel like there's a party going on and you didn't get invited.
Right.
Like, no matter what. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, like, cause it goes, like you were saying, it goes against our, probably like the way we evolved as a species, like
exactly.
Having to rely upon each other,
yeah.
Being a part of the group, you know,
exactly.
But it's
yeah.
a different time now. That's what I find interesting with psychology is like, we still have like that old primitive brain, but
yeah.
we're in such a totally
yeah.
different,
yeah.
environment. But, mountains of North Carolina, pretty beautiful though. Like scenic.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So beautiful. Such beautiful winters, such beautiful falls. I love North Carolina. Besides California, it's the only state in the union that has all seven ecospheres. It's got,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's got desert, it's got beach, it's got woodlands, it's got swamp, it's got every. California is the only other one.
Wait, so they have desert? Where's desert in North Carolina?
You know, I don't know. It's some part of whatever.
That's incredible, though.
Somewhere out towards the beach side. Yeah.
Yeah, I always like loved like driving in that part of the U.S.
Oh, so
or like
beautiful.
Through Virginia, like the
yeah.
mountainous regions.
Or have you been to Kentucky where you can see the bluegrass in the summer? It literally is teal colored.
Oh wow! No,
Wow.
I haven't.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah,
wow.
bluegrass is a thing, and it is all over the greens of Kentucky during the summertime. It's so gorgeous.
Really cool. Well, it's the bluegrass state, right? Is that the
Yeah,
tagline?
it
I
is. It's
think
called the
that's
Bluegrass State.
yeah, that's the tagline. Okay, now I know why. Okay. So biostatistics. I'm not familiar. Yes, I guess just give us a rundown. What are you measuring? What can be measured?
So anything in the framework of the biology of any species. So here's a kind of a weird job. They're the guys that pick up dead animals on the road. The biostatisticians take that body count, and from inference, they can tell how many of them are alive in the woods.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's all of that. They work in all kinds of places. And so a lot of them work in the forestry spaces. And then, of course, there's inside of the human space where biostatisticians run, what's the likelihood that you buy this insurance policy and you're this age and you die within this many years? Right. So that's a very specific type of statistician that uses health statistics. And those guys are called actuaries, but they're statisticians. They give death, they build death tables to see how much insurance companies should pay. And so there's a, I mean, the gamut of where you could go studying biostatistics is huge. It's huge. And then, of course, sports statisticians. There are a lot of statisticians that are in the sports field, particularly in, baseball. Those guys are co statistics collecting fools. They're just everything. And so yeah, I liked it because of that human condition. And that's really, I wanted to do it. I just didn't feel called to it the way I felt called to the market, because it had the human condition, it had the mathematical probabilities condition, especially if you look at options, and it had that really big behavioral approach where you could go, I bet you everybody does this. Let's watch and see if it happens, right? And yeah, it's just the amalgam of my whole life. As I approach 60, I cannot believe that in less than 2 years I'll be 60 years old. My life has gone, but I'm hoping for another 40 more. I don't know that I'm going to be able to walk by myself after that, so I might give a bus driver a bad day. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. I
No.
would not give a bus driver a bad day. I would just, trip off a log. But yeah, that's me. I'm gonna keep pursuing excellence in the markets.
Wonderful.
Awesome. You look great for your age. Would have never
Thanks.
guessed it, but the stat, yeah, coming from playing poker, I get involved in like fantasy sports betting, and so all the sports stats are and the predictiveness of it, and like obviously not 100%. All like I mean, baseball's huge. Baseball really kicked it off.
Yes.
It's just incredible, and then like kind of mixing it with like what you see watching it, because most of these people on TV are just like they're not paying attention to this the. They're the analytics of it.
Yeah.
But I love all that stuff.
Yeah. I love analytics myself.
Is there a particular team you root for in baseball?
Excuse me?
Is there a particular team you root for in baseball?
Team. Oh,
Yeah.
yes. Orioles, the Orioles. And it's because I want to stay married to my husband.
They got a good
No,
team.
he's a big Orioles fan. He loves the Orioles, always has. But yeah, so big fan, big fan. We finally got, some good talent on there. And so Yeah, baseball season's good. We actually just came from, we went to visit one of the kids in Annapolis and we saw a flurry of games. So that was really fun.
I really love Camden Yards. That's such a great
It's
park.
nice. Yeah.
I used to go a lot. I'm not an Orioles fan, but I would go watch when they would play the Yankees. And just had a great time at that ballpark. I don't know. It's just awesome. I just the vibe of it. Just.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice. That's one of the things he wants to do. He's like, we are going to go visit every single park in the United States. I'm like, oh, all right, cool.
That's fun.
So,
Sounds like fun.
yeah.
Yeah. Do you still keep up with neuroscience field
I
at all?
do.
Yeah.
I do. There is a fantastic neuroscientist. His name is David Eagleman, and he was at Rice, but I think he moved to Stanford. He does so many incredible studies. So I'm always looking at what he's into. I'm always looking to see what they're doing with the vagal nerve. Because the vagus is such a, it's very, very interesting that it sits there and it can do all of those things. And so, yeah, I still keep up with all the newer things that are coming up and watching, so love it still.
Awesome. Okay, I wrote his name down. Eagle, David Eagleman.
Yeah.
Do you, for my own curiosity, did you recommend any books maybe that came out recently or any good neuroscience books for me to start with?
Well, David has two really good books.
Okay.
So I would start with his,
Okay.
and he's very he writes it for the layman. It's not overly wonky. And a lot of neuroscience books are, oh, I'll tell you a good one. It's Why We Sleep by Matthew. What is his name? I gift a lot of my books, so I don't see it up there anymore. So once I read it, I give it away sometimes. So, but yeah, Why We Sleep. Absolutely fantastic breakdown of brain patterns and how they can, how we can train up our minds and such.
Awesome. Awesome too, because yeah, obviously all of this, I'm always thinking on, okay, how do I optimize my performance? We're in a performance
Yeah.
sport here, so definitely on that. All
Yeah,
right,
do you
awesome.
use anything that gives you biofeedback or biorhythms
You
or?
know I don't, but I'm sure you could sell me on it.
So Brett Steenbarger uses something called Muse.
Oh yeah.
And
I
yeah.
know exactly my I just bought one of those for my girlfriend.
Oh yeah. So that's
Yeah.
supposed to be a huge biofeedback tool.
Okay.
I take my blood pressure a few times a day because I feel it spike when I'm thinking things. And so I do that. And I have an Aura ring that I use, but I think this Muse is supposed to be the big
Muse.
deal. Yeah.
I think it's probably wrong thinking on my end. I kind of like, all right, like I need to feel these things for myself, or like I don't want to rely. And like I said, I'm probably wrong in thinking this because I like statistics and I like seeing things like this, and it probably would help, but I kind of want to like, all right, feel for myself and let, and instead of having to rely on numbers to tell me, but I'm sure I could find a nice, happy medium.
You know, my thought is if you are in tune with yourself, if you're really searching for that, okay, feel that. If you're just in tune with yourself, you really don't need those other things. What you want to do is be responsive to what your body's telling you.
Sure.
Just be responsive to it, which is, you know, me, I get up, I'm tired, I'm like, I guess I got a trade. And but I don't, right? I mean, I'm not at a desk with some guy going, what's your output today? Right? I'm lucky that way. And so, you know, if you just commit to saying, all right, I'm gonna feel, I mean, I could feel when my stomach is not digesting food. I'm so into going, okay, that's supposed to feel normal. What I mean, I'm in tune with a lot of my systems. And I think naturally, if you're like that, I don't know that you need anything else.
Okay.
Unless you're driven to go, I want to see the numbers on this. Yeah, what do the numbers really tell you? And then how accurate are those numbers? Everything's going to be rangy. So
Sure.
you'll know better here or here, right? Your heart, that's solar plexus part of you, it can really take over. And sometimes you have to go, you know what? My head knows what's going on.
Yeah.
It's my heart that's going to send me in the wrong direction. So.
Good point. Good point. I like that. All right. Last thing here. I thought it was interesting. You mentioned you still watch cartoons.
I do.
Yeah. Which cartoons do you like?
Okay. So I haven't watched this in a while, but the Fairly Odd Parents.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that.
Listen, you want to talk about subversive undercurrents?
Yeah, yeah.
It's an assault on all the parents that use their children as trophies and are completely self-involved.
Oh, wow,
it's
yeah.
just oh yeah it's fantastic. And then what other cartoon I loved? It's because of the kids. I'm going to blame it on them. I love the Powerpuff Girls.
That's a
Also
good one.
hilarious.
I'm going to come out. I like the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were hilarious. And then,
I'm Googling. I'm Googling.
Mojo Jojo was such a funny bad guy to me. He would make me
Mojo
laugh
Jojo.
my face off.
Yeah, I know you, Mojo. Yeah.
Sorry, JJ.
It's okay. I'll Google it. It's okay. I'll Google it. I'll figure out.
It's actually really fun. Yeah, it's funny. You know, because my sister, it's funny you even bring this up because my sister used to watch it growing up, and so I'd catch it here and there. And then like a couple of years ago, you know, it came on one of the streaming platforms, and you know, came by watching it, and I'm like, you know, this is really funny, like and interesting. Yeah,
it is. It is. It's great. It's great.
Yeah.
My husband would always go, you know what? I just don't like it that they don't have fingers. Come on.
Yeah, they got the rounded hands. Yeah,
oh,
rounded
okay.
feet.
I see what's going on there. Yeah, there's no fingers. No fingers. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, I mean, I like things that make me laugh. I think I love things that make me laugh. So I find a lot of that in cartoons, you know, especially if they're subversive, like South Park. You know, it's a very subversive cartoon.
Yeah.
It's overtly subversive.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so I do. I love them.
I think they're the same. I think that those guys, I forget their names, the writers of South Park, but I think they made that movie. I just seen it recently. Team America, World Police. I don't know if you've seen the movie.
No.
Oh, it's yeah, it's funny. Maybe a little crude, but if that's how they are, it's funny though. But
check it out.
I think it's good to maybe my opinion, but I know others share it. Like the you know, we all a lot of people get that like childlike spirit beat out of them through life, and I think it's good
Oh,
to keep that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If you can't find joy, life is never going to be fun. I mean, life,
yeah,
true. You have to find joy. You just have to find it.
Well said. That'll be a good note for us to end on. And so that's going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please rate and review it for us. If you'd like to join a supportive professional trading room, you can join us at microefutures.com. Anne-Marie, tell the people where they can find you and anything else you want them to know.
Well, you can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Anne Marie Trades. And you can also find me in the Micro Futures room. I love listening to JJ. He's really awesome. I
Thank
read
you.
all his notes. Sometimes I feel like I'm stalking because I read all his notes afterwards. I'm like, ooh, what did he say there? And so I spend a lot of time in there because the stuff is great. And, you know, once in a while, you can see me on any of the other platforms that you talked about in the very, very beginning. So, yeah, just loving work. And even when it punches me in the face, I'll get up and I'll go, that's all you got. I'm ready for more.
That's a
And
real trader.
so,
That's a real trader.
yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we appreciate your support as well. JJ,
Definitely.
final or parting thoughts?
Oh, it's just wonderful to have you on with us. And thank you for being so supportive of us in the room. And we appreciate you. We sort of think of you as family, so we're really happy
Love it.
to have
Love
you with
it.
us.
Yeah. And it is a great environment. It is a really good environment. A lot of traders in there really working hard at helping other people trade well. And it's, you know, it's really great. I love it.
I well, appreciate you, Anne-Marie. Really enjoyed the conversation.
I did too, Ray.
I really did.
Yeah.
You're very impressive person, individual, and yeah, just thanks. God bless.
Take care.
And
Thank you
so
so much.
for Anne-Marie, I'm Paulie Walnuts. He's the Gorilla of House Street. You stop, though.